Hey guys, welcome in Unpaved. I'm Sean Salisbury, and I'm pumped about today's show. Obviously, we got a lot of NFL news we'll get to, but that can wait because the NFL's next week. We've been talking a lot about it, but college football is here, alive and well. Week zero's passed. Week one on its way. He's the host of Upon Further Review. I get to go on with him once a week throughout the football season, and I love it. Weekdays 3 to 6 Central on ESPN, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Alexandria, Lafayette, Lake Charles. And he's not just the host of the show. He like got 14 hats, okay? And he wears them all. And then I steal him and force him to come on here on notice to come on here and talk football because I think he's one of the foremost experts in college football. I do. And I think it's highly underrated across the country. You should be getting him on wherever you are if you want good college football talk, among other things. And he joins us now, Matt Moscona. Matt, welcome in, brother. I appreciate it. And I know your affinity for college football, and we're going to give a national audience a chance to hear it as well. Do you get it like players going to training camp? Does this time of year hit different for you before it starts?
So, Sean, yeah, mostly because, man, Brian Kelly gives us crazy access. Yes, seriously, yes. Man, like in the NFL, it's part of the CBA. Like there's media mandates where media gets to watch practice. In college, they ain't like that, man. So there's some places where media might get 10 minutes a stretch and then you're out. Brother, we're at training camp. I mean, we ain't practicing, but we're there like the players are. I mean, we get access every day. There's times he'll let us watch the entire practice. So yeah, man, when August hits and the team reports, I tell my wife, I'll see you in February. I mean, that's pretty much how it goes when right. We get to this point. So I feel like, you know, maybe even more so than most, you know, a lot of local market media do a great job covering their teams with what they can. We just probably get to go deeper with this team in LSU because we get more access to them.
Why does Brian Kelly do that, you think, Matt? I mean, I know that it's fan-friendly. We talk about that, media-friendly, but is it just Brian's personality or is it different because it's LSU?
You know, Sean, when he was at Notre Dame, I don't think he did this at Notre Dame.
Agreed.
But he's done this since he showed up. Now, hey, really, so the first spring he was here and he opened up spring, I joked with a buddy of mine, Shay Dixon, who's over at On3. We're like, when Kelly showed up at LSU, he was inheriting a mess. You know, they had the 38 scholarship players and they had back-to-back really bad seasons under Ogeron. So we joke like he's letting us in just so we could tell everybody how bad it's going to be to lessen the expectation a little bit. They went, you know, they of course recruited Jaden Daniels, beat Bama and won the West the first year. But I don't know why, man. Maybe it's just a point in his career where with so many sea changes in college sports, with NIL, with now revenue share, with, you know, front offices that kind of look more like an NFL. Maybe he's just building this out more like an NFL model is built. Honestly, I've never asked him that. I probably should, but I just don't want to jinx it because it's great to get all the access.
Is Brian Kelly, if he wasn't making the money he's making, I hold him in high regard, but you know how it is, Matt. I mean, we're year to year, man. If he wasn't making $100 million, would he be on the hot seat or is he on the hot seat?
He's not on the hot seat. And it's a good question. I understand why people ask it, but Brian Kelly, when he signed the contract at LSU, he signed a 10-year deal worth $95 million, where 90% of it is guaranteed. So Sean, if they were going to fire him after this year, they would owe him around $50 million, 50. Look, LSU is not a poverty program, but it's also not the kind of place that can afford to stroke $50 million checks to make coaches go away. Right. That is not a highest and best use of resources, and it's not going to happen. So what I've said from the day LSU hired Brian Kelly is, for better or worse, they are financially bound to one another for a decade. Now, I think the better question, Sean, like if this year doesn't go well, by whatever standard, which we could talk about, remember, after this year, you're losing Nussmeier, and all the transfers you just brought in, most of them are gone. So it is realistic to assume a step back in 2026. If that happens, then maybe you're looking at what's the exit strategy? But it's not now at all.
Matty, you're so close to the situation and understanding every move from rosters and NIL and what they're spending. Why do they have so much trouble? And Brian hasn't won an opening game, and this one, we can preview this one. And this ain't easy. This is a team I had David Pollack on. He thinks that Clemson's a national champion this year. Now, I also talked to, you know, our guy Bear, who's on the Big Noon Kickoff pregame show, who is a phenomenal, Chris Felica. And he thinks that he's not sold yet on Clemson as far as that 11-1 type team. Where do you sit on Clemson, and why does Brian have such a hard time getting this team started?
So I'll take those in order. So with Clemson, I think they're interesting because Clemson and LSU are very similar. They just built it different ways. Right. Both have unicorns in that they have fifth-year senior quarterbacks that stayed, Sean. I mean, both these guys never transferred. They waited their turn, and they played. But Clemson has 16 returning starters. It's the most returning production in the country. So that part of it, you return Klubnik, you return four starters on the offensive line. Clemson returns their top three receivers. They return a ton on defense. That part of it, you look and go, man, that's formidable. The flip side of it, though, when you peel back the layer of the onion, I kind of wonder how good Clemson really was last year. Remember, they lost 34-3 to Georgia. They lost in their home field to Louisville. They lost in their home field to South Carolina, and they lost to Texas in the bowl game. And Sean, in those four games, they allowed an average of more than 200 rushing yards per game in those four losses. On the season, Clemson was 84th against the run, allowed 160 yards a game. So they got talent, right? Like Parker and Woods, those are dudes that are probably going to be first-round picks. But you know this as well as anybody. Like, there's sometimes you could have really talented dudes that are just part of bad units.
Agreed.
And that was Clemson defensively a year ago. So you got everybody or a lot of guys back from a unit that wasn't great. Like, how much better are they? I think that's really the question with Clemson. Now, the schedule shapes up for Clemson that they should win the ACC and be a playoff team. If they're not, I'm surprised. The flip side of it with LSU, where you asked about Brian Kelly in the opener, the trouble's been finishing, Sean. Like, they were leading. I mean, you and I talked so much about the SC opener last year, but LSU was leading that game going in the fourth quarter, man. You know, they started fast against Florida State each of those 2 years. You know, went right down the field on their opening drives, and they stalled in the red zone. I think it's more being able to finish games, and that starts with running the football, man. And that's what this team couldn't do a year ago, and that's what they got to fix this year.
Matty, you've been there through some pretty damn good quarterbacks. And I know they've been, like you mentioned, Nussmeier stayed and been there from day one and just went through the process. But let me think about your excitement when they had the year before they were going to leave to the pros. Jaden, Burrow, both transfers, and Nussmeier here. So going into a season, now all three predicted. Burrow actually wasn't predicted as a first rounder coming out of that season, but right. They had the best season. The good Lord himself was down there probably like, damn, this guy's pretty good. But going into their final year, just as the quarterback, which one did you feel best about going into their final year on campus?
Well, I will not lie. You Burrow, if you go back and look at like the mock drafts from before that 2019 season, Burrow was like a late day three projection.
Right.
In 2018, his first year in Baton Rouge, he went the entire month of October without throwing a touchdown pass. So Burrow's transformation was dramatic and unforeseen. Like there's nobody that could have possibly projected 60 touchdown passes like
from the year before, no doubt. Yeah.
That was an absurdity. Daniels, remember the knock on Jaden his first year is that he wouldn't take the risk. You know, at one point Brian Kelly even said, I want him to throw some interceptions. You know, you got to give, because it's going to happen when you're giving your guy a shot to make plays. But I did pick, Sean, that year in 23 LSU to win the SEC because I thought with Jaden, Brian Thomas, Malik Nabers, that was going to be a special offense, and they were. They were the best offense in the country. I mean, they led the country in total in scoring offense. I could not have foreseen the defense being literally the worst ever. I mean, that was literally the worst defense statistically in the history of LSU.
It was a tough watch, wasn't it, Matty? It was tough to watch.
Yeah. But I think of all of them, Sean, probably because I have the basis of knowing what Burrow and Daniels did going from the year 4 to year 5. I think we all collectively are caught up in this. And I'll remind you, Nuss had the best first year as a starter of the three. He threw for 4,000 yards last year, Sean. He is the leading returning passer in college football. If he can just purge some of the bad decisions out of his game, he could be every bit with those guys were, and I ain't going to go run for 1,000 yards like Jaden did, but you know what I mean? He right. could be a guy that's leading one of the top offenses in the country and could find himself in New York for the Heisman. That's realistic for Nuss.
Well, brother, you know how I am when I answer questions. I'm about as unfiltered and just like you are. So I get to flip the script on you now. And who's the most underrated, or should I say underrated? Who's the most overrated team in college football right now?
You and I are going to disagree on this one, I think, but I think the most overrated team is South Carolina. I understand the Lenore Sellers hype because he is an impressive guy to watch. But man, I watched half a season last year where Lenore Sellers couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. And he is impressive. But I also look at the other thing that made South Carolina so good last year was that defense. And man, you don't lose guys like Kennard and Emin Wari and everything they lost on the defensive side of the ball without missing a beat. And if you take a look at South Carolina's schedule, it is brutal. I think they are a 7-win football team this year. They lose Rocket Sanders as well. Yeah. It was an all-SEC running back. Like, it's possible that at spots they could be better than they were a year ago, but I think that is a 7-5 football team that has got just landmines littered all over their schedule.
And so just so you folks know, when I go on Matt's show, that we haven't had the conversation in private about South Carolina or Lenore Sellers. But he has asked me about it. We've talked about it. And I don't disagree with him. And you're on the record 7-8-win team. And I do agree that for Sellers to be a great player on Sundays, as I've said, just talk college, that there's accuracy and the consistency with the arm throw in rhythm, on schedule, all that. But my take on him, as you know, Matt, I'm a fan because I think he's got this refusal to lose in him. Now, you can refuse to lose all you want. If you don't have enough players around you, you can't make throws under pressure. It doesn't matter. But he is a beast. And as college players go, he can take over a game that some college player, you know what I'm talking about. He can dominate you with his legs. And if he's in rhythm, there's just this feeling of load me on my back that even when it looks ugly, I still give him a chance to be successful. Now, as far as Sonny, but as a college player, I actually do think if his accuracy is up, that we're going to hear whispers of him in the Heisman Trophy race simply because I think he's that big a beast. I don't know how he's going to translate to – you know how I am, Matty. I go hard after the season's over on the NFL stuff.
Yeah.
But as a Saturday player, he's tough to game plan against because of the dual threat and the monster that he is physically with the ball in his hands. Agree or disagree?
No, look, Sean, especially the conversation here, because LSU and South Carolina played last year in Columbia, right. And LSU won that game, and Sellers missed the second half of that game, and LSU couldn't tackle him. Now LSU really struggled to tackle running quarterbacks last year. Safety play was awful a season ago, but if Sellers is healthy, it's right to assume that South Carolina probably beats LSU. But man, the throw he made in the end zone against Alabama when they had a chance to win that game was jaw-droppingly bad.
You can't miss it.
You know, there's just and by the way, everybody's allowed to improve. And I assume he will improve from last year to this year. But I think it's also right to approach conversations like this with a degree of skepticism to say, I'm going to have to see it to believe it.
Agreed.
I know you're very high on DJ Lagway. We've talked about that. You've talked to me about watching Lagway as a young guy in high school camps. And the physical ability is undeniable. I also watched him throw as many interceptions as touchdowns last year. His numbers mirrored Michael Van Buren's at Mississippi State.
He was careless with the football at times, Maddox. At times, in over his head, but no denying the physical, obviously, skills, right. The question.
So it's just a matter of I just need to see it. You know, I just need to see you go do it for 12 games across an 8 SEC game schedule. And, you know, Sean, Florida's another one, man. I don't know if you peeked at their schedule, but after those first 2 weeks when they play Long Island and South Florida, it's at LSU.
Matt, start that again. Matt, you freezed up for a second. What were you saying about Florida?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I don't know if you've taken a look at Florida's schedule. But they open up. That's another one that I could see Billy Napier having a better team this year than a year ago. But I could see them being a 7-win team as well.
It's brutal. Like,
Sean, brutal. Everybody, like, we have this conversation. Everybody assumes their team's going to win 9, 10, 11 games. Like, somebody's got to lose. Right. Auburn was 5-7 last year. You know, like, somebody's got to lose these games. Like, some fan base is going to be really disappointed based on what their expectation is. And I think South Carolina and Florida are probably two that I'm penciling that are probably going to be teams that underperform based on what their fan bases are expecting.
you and I are sitting in a bar having a beer, and a fan, another person that loves football, walks in and says, the Big Ten's the best conference in college football in 2025. What do you say to him? I'm getting out of the way and letting you two hash it out. So what do you say to him?
I just don't know that I believe the depth is there in the Big Ten. But you know what's so interesting? We have conversations. I was having a conversation with someone similar to this, and they're talking about Michigan and Ohio State. I said, hey, at Penn State, I'm like, how about the team that won the conference last year? People totally forget Oregon's in the Big Ten. Like, Oregon, SC have added great depth to that league. Washington potentially as well. But I think if you just went 1-16, you know, you match up the top 16 from the Big Ten, the top 16 from the SEC, you probably favor the SEC in more games than you would the Big Ten.
But is it more the bottom heavy? That they're better at the bottom than the Big Ten?
I think so. Like, here's a good example of it, Sean. Indiana last year was 11-1. They played one ranked team all season. It was Ohio State, and they got housed. They still got in the playoff. Well, there's just not a possibility to go through an SEC season where you're going to play one ranked team. It's just not a possibility for any of the 16 teams in the conference because there's more depth. But you get to the point we just talked about, which is somebody's got to lose. So you could have a Hugh Freeze Auburn team. He's a good coach, and they got talent there, and they're sitting there at 5-7, but that's not a terrible football team, you know, talent-wise. So I think, listen, it's hard to argue against the top of the league, and Texas and Ohio State are going to play week one, and that's going to be really fun to watch. I mean,
Penn State's
the Big Ten's won the last two national titles.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll tell you, Sean, like, I feel for Oregon last year, man. Like, they were the only undefeated team in the country. They got a crappy draw. You know, the Ohio State got a
you froze up. Okay. Yeah. You were just talking about the bad draw for Oregon, right? Last year.
Yeah.
Opening game, you mentioned Ohio State and Texas, the veterans and the depth of quarterback in the SEC. And we have discussed this, Matt, you and I, is pretty impressive. You even get down to Vanderbilt, the quarterback position I'm talking about. Will, if you were going to pick somebody, and maybe it's Texas because they're talented, but a quarterback that thrives in their system, it's not the starter the year before in the SEC.
You know, well, the most obvious answer, Sean, is, I don't know if this counts, but it's probably John Mateer at Oklahoma because Ben Arbuckle's coming with him.
Right.
So you got a guy that was a 3,000-yard passer. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a new, I guess you'd have to say it's a new system, right? But he's familiar with it, with Ben Arbuckle coming in. I think Oklahoma is the most fascinating team in the SEC this year for that reason. Like, I understand all the conversations last year about the injuries at receiver and pass catcher. And, you know, and look, they went pot committed to Jackson Arnold, and that was a mistake. I mean, they showed a fifth year guy in Dylan Gabriel the door to go with the hot, flashy young guy. And it bit him, and Oregon was the beneficiary. And now Jackson Arnold's at Auburn. So now they're going to get a veteran guy in John Mateer. And if it was, in fact, a situation where it was just injuries at receiver that cost them, then maybe Oklahoma's dangerous. But you know, you get John Mateer coming in from Washington State. You know, you got a running back coming in from Cal. They get a transfer receiver coming in from McNeese State. Like, should I be buying all that? I don't know. And I'll tell you, Sean, the thing about one thing John Mateer said at SEC Media Days in Atlanta last month that struck me. He was asked if, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he was asked if the talent on the roster at Oklahoma struck him. And he said something to the effect of, yeah, you know, every team I've ever been on, I've always been the most talented guy. It's like, it ain't like that here. And it makes me wonder, like, is John Mateer stepping up to a level of competition that he's not familiar with, that's just going to take him an adjustment period. Some guys handle that really well. And maybe he is ready, but that's one where if that works, right? If Mateer at Oklahoma with Ben Arbuckle coming with him, if that works, then they probably save Brent Venables' job. But otherwise, if it doesn't, Sean, there's a chance Brent Venables not coaching that team in November.
Yeah, I think if there's a hot seat, he's on one of the biggest hot seats in the country. I don't think there's any question about it. Matt, with Arch Manning, you've seen the guy since he had a pacifier in his mouth. right there in Louisiana and watched him and was probably studying tape a year after that from with the uncles of the grandpa and Cooper and the rest of it. You sell him to me. Sell him to the fans that, oh, overhyped. He's a man. What's going to happen? You know, he's UT. Everything's been set for him. You still got to go perform. What are we going to see from this guy? And what have you seen from him preparing for this moment?
Yeah, the whole, if his name was Arch Smith, he wouldn't get the hype is so bogus. I mean, Sean, Bryce Underwood's a great example. Bryce Underwood, number one quarterback in the country, starting in Michigan. Go to the front page of any national website. They're talking about Bryce Underwood starting, right? With Arch now, it's been 3 years, right? So we've had 3 years of buildup anticipating this moment of him starting. The thing with Arch, look, man, you know, the Mannings are, it's weird, Sean, because they're kind of an enigma here, meaning in Louisiana. Everybody loves Archie, right? He's the guy from Ole Miss, from Mississippi, who came, was the face of the franchise in New Orleans, played on some miserable teams, but he was awesome and always did it with class and stayed here, right? Decided to raise his family here. And so people love the Mannings for that. But all the kids spurned LSU. And this is such an LSU. And it's hard to say spurn because none of them have a tie to LSU, right? Yeah, I mean, Archie's an Ole Miss guy. And you chart your own path, which I've never had a problem with, but there's a lot of people who do. So they love the Mannings on one hand that they've been so integral. I mean, the Mannings just donated a bunch of money and renamed the Children's Hospital in New Orleans to the Mannings. And they've been so community oriented. They're great people. So it's a little bit of but you're right. I've seen everyone's been aware of Arch since he was a child here. But you grow up in that family and everyone knows your name and you're constantly in the spotlight. And there's just nothing that's really going to move him. Like, I don't think going to Ohio State playing in front of 100,000 people this week is going to move Arch Manning. Like, I think you want to talk about like the heartbeat being steady. I think his heartbeat's going to be fine in that one. It's just, what's it like the first time that you're in a big environment and all of a sudden Caleb Downs is at safety and now you have to read the safety and make the right decision and throw? I don't know. And he's not going to know until he does that too. You know what that's like, but I just think there's some things with Arch that are just going to take time and experience. He'll make mistakes against Ohio State this weekend. I think in week two, he'll be better than week one. In week eight, he'll be better than week five. And it'll be a progression. But, man, all the physical abilities there, and he does and says all the right things. And I think he's going to be great. I don't know if they'll win the national championship. He'll win the Heisman like people think, but I think he's going to be great.
Man, you know, to validate what you're saying, and while I wasn't a Manning, I was highly recruited in the anticipation of me being the starter at SC. Where you mentioned about Downs coming down and how you're going to read him in the hole and where you're going to throw it. My first start was at the Swamp against a good Charlie Pell University of Florida team, and they had Wilbur Marshall.
No.
Anybody who goes back and watches that tape, it was the greatest individual performance in the history of mankind, and I was the recipient of it, if I've mentioned before in my past. But I can remember exactly what it was like. And you think, oh, I know the speed because I'm a sophomore starter. I watched from the sidelines. But then you get it and you're like, well, I need another extra quarter to get through. And Wilbur's different, man. This guy, I may be a highly recruited quarterback, but that's a grown-ass man times four. And I've never, to this day, I don't know if I've ever seen a better in-person with my own eyes defensive performance. I just happened to be the sucker that got it, right?
Who won?
We went on a seven-game roll. You get going. You know, I played decent in the game, but didn't play great. And Wilbur, he did. When we say wrecker, I think Wilbur invented it because he sure as hell did it to me. So, but it you gather it. So even no matter what happens, good or bad, you still got to come back and play the rest of them. So I do, and it was loud, and it was hot, and it was the first game in September in the Swamp, and it was miserable, but it was competitive and awesome. But you do learn valuable lessons, which he will, because the mental preparation, I don't think any of us are worried about that in the emotional side. Okay, so with Arch going there and doing that, do you have them with everything in mind? Are they the best team in the country going in your mind, or somebody else should be there?
I don't think I have Texas as the best team in the country, not only because of Arch, but Sean, they're replacing four starters on the offensive line. Look, their left tackle, Kelvin Banks, is in New Orleans. We're fired up for him. But man, that's a big ask. You know, they lose so much around him. Now, they got great talent defensively returning, and maybe that's a big boost for them. But, you know, Vernon Broughton, the big defensive lineman's in New Orleans as well. Bo Davis just drafted him there. I think when you recruit well and you spend money in the portal, your roster is talented enough to win any game you play. But how long does it take for that to gel? It's a very similar conversation here, Sean, with LSU, where I don't think people realize how ham LSU went in the transfer portal. They had the number one portal class by a country mile. And they're all in, but man, you got so many new faces. How long does it take it all to gel? I tend to always look at, when I look at a projection like that, Sean, I see who has the fewest questions against the most manageable schedule. Well, Texas has the manageable schedule, but there's questions all over the field. The fewest questions against the most manageable schedule is probably Penn State. But I still don't trust Drew Aller to win the big game. Go back to what I said. It's not say he can't, but go back to the conversation in fairness we had about Sellers and Lagway earlier and Arch. Like, brother, at some point I just got to see you prove you can go do it. And maybe he will this year. Maybe this is the year it'll happen for him. But it's hard to hit your wagon there and make that bet when you've seen it go the other way so many times already.
And you know what else, Matt? No matter what they say, as a quarterback, what we say in those moments in Drew's position or any of them, while they're confident and say they can, even they have to see it themselves to catapult. They really do, because it's just different. It's a different energy in those monster games that are single elimination. You're either going somewhere special or you're not. And the QB position is such a focus in all sports. I mean, in every level now, it's through the roof. I have Dr. J, who's a friend on here, been a friend forever, asked me a question earlier on Twitter, and I gave him my answer. I'm curious about yours. How quickly, you know, the NFL, I feel like we can turn around quickly with last to first and gig free agency and money. But aren't we there in college football? How quickly can you turn a program around in college football now? You're a 5-win team. Can you get to a 9-win team from last to first like they can? Is it all about NIL? Has the portal made that obviously the captain obvious? Yes. But how big is that in turning a team around now? And can you go from worst to first in some conference and have a chance to be a playoff team?
Well, worst to first happened last year in the Big 12 with Arizona State. Remember, they were picked last. They were picked dead last in the Big 12, won the league. But so, Sean, my opinion, I think portal, NIL, rev share now, I think the biggest programs it impacts are once great programs, like with great tradition that have resources that had fallen on hard times. Because what you find then is you have motivated boosters who are like, here's our chance to get back. Some examples, right. Florida State, Tennessee, Nebraska. Like, those are the types of programs that I think can benefit in this era. Look, Tennessee made the playoffs a year ago. Florida State was an undefeated team in 2023 before Jordan Travis suffered that horrendous, unfortunate injury. And they didn't even get a swing in the playoff. Nebraska hired Matt Rhule. Looks like maybe they took a first step last year. That's who I think most benefits, and that's going to be your real test case. But I'd also submit, look at SMU. I mean, SMU, quite literally, Sean, bought their way into the Power Four. They got so many billionaires lined up. They're like, hey, you know what, ACC? We don't even need our TV revenue share for a decade. You keep it. Just let us in. We're good. Just let us in. I mean, that's a hell of a flex. And then you're able to go in year one and find your way into the playoff. Sean, I mean, you live in Texas. SMU hadn't competed for nothing since the death penalty.
Right.
Like, and just like that, you can. Look, there's a kid from New Orleans named Ja'Kai Douglas who's a great receiver. He was committed to LSU, but he was probably the fourth best. It's a top 150 player in the country, probably the fourth highest rated receiver committed to LSU's class. He flipped to SMU. Why? Because SMU is going to pay him like their number one receiver. Like, you can do it if you have the backing to do it. I think those are the types of programs that can and will.
A team like Texas Tech, we got to keep an eye on because they're spending now. They're a team that validates it. They're the next SMU, correct?
Yes.
Possibly. Right.
But it's also going to be interesting for me, for other programs. Like, I'll give you one down the road for me, like Tulane. Tulane's a G5 in the American. And brother, they could build a campus of solid gold if they wanted to and never run out of money. But do you want to invest it in football?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Harvard and Yale could do the same thing if they wanted to.
But that's not where they're,
it's just not where their priority is. So what schools are going to say, we're prioritizing being great in football? And you're right. Texas Tech is the other great example of it.
I'm going to let you fix the problems we have in college football. You are the guy that's fixing it. Okay.
I got it.
So I'm ready. It's one question on a three-tiered thing, and you can plug it all in. I don't care.
Oh, I'm ready.
Are you happy with the playoff? I mean, so is playoff, NIL, and transfer portal, that whole NCAA governing body decision, which we know they're not the most powerful governing body in the planet, needless to say. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you're fixing it, Maddie, where college football is at its best.
Got it. Yeah. This is easy. You're just going to have to give me some space here, okay?
That's why you're on here, brother. They're tired of hearing me. Let's go. This is easy.
All right. Number one, I don't care about the little guys. I'm a college football elitist. It is not the Power Four's job to fund the G5. It is not Texas's job to make sure Texas El Paso can fund their athletic department. It's not LSU's job to make sure ULM can fund their athletic department. You want to build facilities and pay coaches? Have a freaking bake sale. Go raise some money. I never want to see ever again a Power Four against a G5 opponent. We need to completely segregate these. The Power Four needs to be its own league where it only plays Power Four. The G5 needs to be its own thing where it has its own championship and the FCS and so on. Well, how can we fund our athletic department if we don't play those games where we get $1 million to lose? Figure it out. Ain't my job to figure it out. Yeah. Sean, you and I are going to binge on college football this weekend. And you know what we're not going to care about? Texas A&M against New Mexico State or whatever game that is. But you know what I want to see? I want to see a 12-game schedule loaded with awesome games every week that everybody wants to see. And that can only happen, though, if everyone's doing it and you have an equitable schedule, because no team is going to voluntarily load their schedule with 12 Power 5 games or Power 4 games and put themselves at a disadvantage if not everybody else is doing it. So that's number one. We are completely segregating the divisions. We're going to have the Power 4, and Power 4 only plays the Power 4. That's it. And we're going to it, and we are going to a 32-team playoff. Now, if we're going to the Power 4, and the Power Four exists, and we're talking about 60 teams, I don't need 32. I can do 16 in that instance. If we're staying as we are now, which we are, I want 32, where one plays 32 and so on, and we're ranking them on a previously agreed upon power ranking system. So I don't need a group of self-important goons in a hotel ballroom in suburban Dallas debating things like game control and defensive efficiency, trying to tell me how they think teams deserve to be in a playoff to get a shot. College football is the only sport in the history of mankind where you can win every game you play and not even have a chance to play for a championship because a bunch of goons in a hotel ballroom decided you're not worthy of that right in that
opportunity. Some of your athletic directors for said schools that are going to be in the playoff. Right.
Give me a break. Like, Sean, from the beginning of mankind, when we had sports, go back like to the ancient Greeks, you know, wrestling naked, the Romans in the Colosseum. In the every sport in the history of mankind, you win every game, you win a championship, right?
Right.
College football is the only one in the history of the world. So every other sport ever has gotten it wrong, and college football has got it right. Brother, we love college football in spite of itself, in spite of its flaws. I cannot wait. And we're getting there. 4, then 12, and we're going to go to 16, which needs to happen. And the SEC's now moved to 9 league games, and the ACC's going to follow. We're getting there. We're getting there. But that will be college football nirvana. When we get to a point where we never have to look at a schedule again, and the penultimate weekend of the college football season has SEC teams playing FCS opponents. I got to go into Tiger Stadium in November, Sean, and watch LSU play Western Kentucky. Kick rocks. Purge that out of my life forever. It'll be better for the TV partners. Everybody will make money. It'll be better for the fans. It'll be more competitive. There'll be balance. We'll have a better playoff. That is my dream. I told you that is the penthouse. Keep me up. There you have it.
Yeah, Maddie, now, and with that, to also further it, is, as you said, if they're the Power Four playing only each other, then the team that's seventh in the SEC does not have a bitch because they're playing. Nobody has a bitch because you're playing. Hey, these are all Power Four teams that can get after it. You didn't get to sneak away and play Tennessee Chattanooga. No disrespect to Tennessee Chattanooga. Love
the
it. Okay.
Stray on here.
Yeah. Now fix NIL and transfer portal.
It's perfect how it is.
It is.
I love it.
You like a guy transferring 4 or 5 times? You okay with that?
I have no problem with it whatsoever. Sean, and maybe, listen, I'm a guy that in my life, I transferred. I started my college career at Holy Cross in South Bend. Right. As an 18-year-old, I thought that was what was best for me. Went there for a year, and it was not a great decision. But I'm glad that I had that experience, and I went and did it. Transferred, went to LSU. Fantastic. I loved it. Sometimes dudes at 18 years old don't make great life decisions. Sometimes you make good decisions. I am perfectly okay with people changing their mind, and they shouldn't be penalized for it. I am also fine with student athletes making as much money as they can possibly make. I wish in your era you had the opportunity to do it, Sean. Like, honestly, and people blame the student athletes. And my point is, it's not student athletes. It's the adults that could have done this forever. But the adults got greedy and figured out ways to grow an economy of scale in college athletics and make untold sums of money where admins, coaches, everybody's getting rich except the players. And if you try to sell me on a college scholarship, I will come through this chat to anybody who disagrees with me and we're going to fist fight. Because, look, I respect, obviously, getting a degree and going to school. I did it. But if you mean to tell me, like, Joe Burrow being at LSU is only worth his scholarship, that is nonsense. Agreed. Like, yes. And by the way, what is market value? Market value is what someone is willing to pay for it. There are people who will pay millions of dollars for little pieces of cardboard with pictures of athletes on them. Why? Because people have imputed a value on that. If some rich guy, if the guy at Oracle wants to give Bryce Underwood $12 million without ever throwing a pass, that's his market value. May not be a smart investment for Oracle guy, or maybe it pays off. But who am I to say? We live in a world where there are the haves and the have-nots. I am fortunate. The school I went to, the team I love, is one of the haves.
Right.
That's not the case for everybody. That's why we should have, just like there's weight class. I love combat sports. I know you do too. I love MMA. There's weight classes, brother, like for a reason. In boxing, there's classifications in high school. There's 5A, 4A, 3A, 2A. Why? Because a school with an enrollment of 2,000 shouldn't be playing a school with an enrollment of 200. Like, why is college football the only one that doesn't understand this?
Would you put a salary cap on the NIL at all? Sure. Would you salary cap him? Leave just as Maddie, you may be the first I've heard just say it wants to tweak now. And I, you know, it's logic. It makes sense. And I know we get frustrated because it's not old school, and you know, but the truth is, a free enterprise system, they should be getting paid. But no, even you don't care. You know what I mean, about no, the teams with the most money can spend the most. But there you go. The big dogs get richer, and that's okay. Then be a big dog is what you're saying.
Sean, what if we capped the amount of talent you could make in on Sports Talk 790 every morning on the Sean Salisbury Show, which is not fair.
Sean, well, I'd even start our own if Eddie was going to do that to us.
Money. We need to cap what Sean can make, because right. I know Sean busts his ass and he played the game and he's done so much in media over 30 years, 40 years. He's crushed it. He shows up every morning, preps his show, does a great job. People listen to him, but it's just not fair that Sean makes so much and the guy at the other station doesn't make as much. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to limit what Sean can make.
You know what, man? You've actually, in truth, because I got old school, but you and I have talked a million times. I do have some news. I do like a lot of stuff that they're doing, a lot of it. And you've actually, it's rare that somebody comes on and gets me pondering deeper than I try to ponder this thing about the free enterprise. It's true. No, I listen. I learn something every time I interview somebody because you guys are all smarter than me. But to look at it in a simplistic form, listen, man, when we apply it to our own lives like that, Matt, you're a sales team or a broadcaster or anybody, a construction worker, tell a construction worker, well, you can only do 3 houses a year. Well,
right.
It makes perfect sense. Are the athletes and the coaches and the high schools and are their families handling it right? It couldn't be too overwhelming for them a little bit. Is that where we need to make the change? Maybe there, Maddie, and how we raise this?
Maybe, but Sean, listen, man, who am I to tell someone how they should handle things in their home, man?
I agree.
That goes back to a decision like when athletes make a decision to go pro or return to school. Like, I'll give you an example. I don't mind sharing this because this guy said this on air. Do you remember Kevin Minter, who was a linebacker at LSU, played for the Bucks, was on their Super Bowl team in 2020? So Kevin interned with my radio show, and he's playing at LSU. He was phenomenal. By the way, the year Manti Te'o won the Butkus, Kevin Minter should have won the Butkus. I mean, Te'o had a fake dead
girl. A great year.
But Minter, go back and look it up. His stats, everything was better than Te'o's that year. Minter should have been the Butkus Award winner. Anyway, Minter had another year at LSU, and I remember when he declared, he came on my show. I mean, I obviously knew him. He had worked with me and for me and all that stuff. And we talked about his decision. He said, man, I'm at a point in my life where I never have to watch my mom struggle again. And that was it. That was his decision. And like, who am I to tell him that's wrong?
So that kind of changed your perspective on it too, right?
Sean, if a guy wants to transfer 3 or 4 times and every time he hits the portal, he catches another payday, who am I to tell that guy he's wrong for going and getting a check, man? Like, Sean, we work in a business that is as transient as coaching, right? Like, Brother, we just lost, like, I lost a great, so I'm the program director at our station as well. And, you know, T-Bob Hebert, who's a super talent. T-Bob is our morning guy. Barstool hired him. Like, should I go tell T-Bob, you need to be loyal? What? No, bro. I was fired up. Like, congrats, dude. You busted your ass. You had an awesome opportunity to go crush it. And we're going to go find the next one. Like, so let me bring it back to college athletics. You know Will Wade. Most people know Will Wade. Oh, yeah. So Will was at LSU. I know Will pretty well. He was coaching at McNeese. I had a chance to go do a show in Lake Charles where McNeese is. And I'm sitting down with Will one day on air. And I bring this up to him, you know, about his – and he says, man, look, I had a guy come up to me. He said, coach, you know, this school DM me or whatever, and they're offering me this. And Will says to me, he said, you got to go. You better get the step. And like Will's telling the kid, you better get down the road. You better take that money. And what he'll do is he'll say, I'll say to the next you, come here for a year, play 40 games, average 26 and 12, and get your check like this guy. Are you doing as an example for this? It's just using this system for what it is and being willing to evolve and be malleable. The problem is we're so rigid in the way things have been for so long, we're not willing to open our minds to what things can be. So the reality is, Sean, I love the conversation, man, but no matter what you and I talk about, it ain't changing. They're not going backwards on the portal. And the day that I've talked to so many attorneys, I mean, there's a whole economy around NIL law that there are lawsuits drafted. The day anyone tries to cap NIL, lawsuits are filed and this thing becomes an even bigger poop show. So no, it's more about how do we make sure that the student athlete, which you talked about, has the right resources to make good decisions, to where we know that there aren't bad actors and bad eggs in the whole ecosystem. That's the kind of thing that I think we need to progress toward. And I understand, man, there's some older school coaches that don't want to mess with that, Sean. That's okay. I get it. You do one thing a certain way for 35, 40 years.
Well, one's on College Game Day, right, Matt? He's on College Game Day.
Yeah. I mean... It's Saban is probably the best example of it, you know, but there's probably 30, 40 year old coaches who are coming up in it. And it's the thing that they're always going to, you know, it's just the way that they know that they're going to have to build a program and win. So
simplistic, damn it. Now you've got me thinking, you know what, transfer 74 times. If you could keep getting that back, my man, this conversation is going to continue throughout the season. I can't wait. You have, That's right between the eyes, and I love it. Okay, you got $1 million, you have to bet it, and you don't get to hedge it, and you only get to put it on one dude to win the Heisman Trophy. One, and you do not, no hedging, brother. And you got it. You don't get to say, well, I'll bet $500,000.
Yeah,
$1 million, all in. Who's it on?
Garrett Nussmeier.
Is it homerism, or is it because you think he's in the best situation?
He's so, if you know me well enough to know there's no homerism.
Exactly.
I'm picking Clemson to beat LSU, by the way. So actually the play I would tell you, Sean, is I would wait till after week one and then make my bet after week one if LSU loses, because I'll get a better number. But I watched Jaden Daniels do it with a 9-3 football team. I watched Joe Burrow do it. And I just told you, Garrett's the leading returning passer in college football. He threw for 4,000 yards. So if Garrett, he has name recognition. He's on a team that's going to be playing in massive games. He's going to throw for 4,000 yards again. So the stats will be there. If the team cooperates, I think it will, and they're playing meaningful games in November, he should be in New York. I understand Arch with the name recognition. I think there's just going to be enough struggles this year, and I don't think there's another obvious choice.
Right.
You could try to sell me on Drew Aller. There's other transfers in place, but Klubnik would maybe be the other one that I would say, and maybe because I think Clemson is going to win the ACC, and that might put him a nose ahead, especially if they win a head-to-head. But those would be the two that I would say if I had to make a bet, it would be those two, and I'd probably side with Nuss.
And you know how much how I feel about Nussmeier. We've talked about him ad nauseum. I think it was a smart move to come back, not only for Sundays, but also for him and for Saturdays and for a chance to win the whole thing and do what we know he can do. Plus, he's got great football IQ, and the DNA ain't bad. It's a good thing with his pops, not too far down the road. All right, get me to the final four, the final two, and who's winning this thing?
Man,
unfair, I know, but I got to ask you.
I hadn't prepped this, honestly. And the hard thing, Sean, about picking a champion in this era is I don't know what the draw looks like. I'm not trying to weasel out. I tell you, I do have LSU beating Texas in the SEC championship game and making the playoff.
Okay.
But just like a year ago where I thought Oregon was the best team all year, they got a bad draw and they were out. Ohio State ended up winning it. So I don't want to weasel out on you, man. I'm just trying to do this now off the top of my dome.
No, and Manny, this is just kind of a going like, off season, you see transfer, say, oh, that team, just kind of before you reserve the right to change it before Saturday if you want. Just kind of an idea who do you think the four best teams in the country are? How's that?
I think I would always, again, who I think are the most talent, who has the most talent, I would go. I think Clemson and LSU were two of them. I would probably throw Penn State in there. And I feel like there's going to be an obvious one I'm missing. I do not. I worry about Georgia. Kirby told us at Media Days he's never had this many freshmen and redshirt freshmen on teams. He's got 40. No, he's got more than half of his roster are first and second year players. I really worry about Georgia this year. I'm not sold on Alabama.
Tennessee with a new quarterback, obviously.
I'm trying to debate and say if I want to throw Texas or Ohio State in there. But since I got Ohio State beating Texas in that game, give me Ohio State.
Fair enough. But we don't believe there's going to be a repeat, right? No repeat.
I think with Ohio State, you go have 15 players drafted. That is so – listen, LSU had 14 drafted in 2019. And we saw what happened the next year in 2020. Like,
right.
You lose that much talent off one team, it's hard to overcome. So, and by the way, I saw a comment there. I'm not sold on Notre Dame either. That's another one where you keep turning over. Sean, what's it like? You turn over quarterback every year, four straight years. That's tough.
The continuity is just you can't keep count. Eventually, it's going to catch up to you. I don't think they're a Final Four team this year either. I agree. But much respect for them. I told the fans when I teased you coming that this was as good as it gets in college football insight. And all you do is validate it, brother. And I know you've got like a business to run and a whole bunch of people you have to see. And I also prepare for your show. And it's a great week to get ready. And I can't wait. We'll do it again. I'll see you on yours next week. And
man,
I learned something from you every time we talk, but I also know that it is epic, epic podcast having you on. Great insight on college football, my man.
Hey man, you didn't know what you were walking into when you were asking me about portal and NIL.
Well, what's great, because normally I'm on the other side like that, man. With you, if we're talking, LSU and maybe the Saints, and we're getting into the whole college football landscape and doing it, and you're asking questions, and we don't get enough chance, because I'm not in studio, to rebut like we would if we were co-hosting the same show for 4 hours.
Yeah.
But I mean, I had an idea of your thoughts because I follow you, but I didn't know you were that adamant about, I'm not touching a damn thing when it comes to NIL and portal. But you know what? In truth, you're the first person that's convinced me, and this is the honest to God truth, that it's made me reconsider my thoughts on the portal, because I thought, man, 3-4, the guy doesn't want to compete. Sometimes he may, well, if he gets beat out, go somewhere else. We let that happen with injuries. I do get it. And you're the first person that's made me think harder than the way I felt, because I was like, you can't talk me out of this about portal, come on, compete. And then, okay, one transfer, the next one you got to sit out. Or, man, do we put a salary cap on this, which I've suggested. But you have made me honestly think about this. So I knew what I was getting with a great insider and opinion. I didn't know you were that adamant on the portal. Yeah. and I friggin' love it. And I'm going to, I'm going to use your example moving forward, and of course give you credit for it. But I am also going to revisit this and see where we are on all this as the season goes on with the college football. You were fantastic, brother, and I can't thank you enough on short notice. You know that.
Well, I appreciate the invite. I'm happy to do it anytime, man. I always love chopping it up with you.
President of the NC2A, Matt Mascona.
I don't want it.
You got my vote times five. I don't, neither do I, but I'm deferring to you. Great stuff, brother. I appreciate you. And have a good show today, and I look forward to this week, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, man.
That's the great Matt Mascona. Love him. I told you guys. And the one thing about it, he's unapologetic, well thought, competitive as hell. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to his show down there, I'm telling you, hell, the big reason I go on is because I get to talk hardcore football with him every week, every friggin' week. And so it was great to be on the other end. And he makes points that are definitely something to think about. And I am. And I rarely have somebody talk me out of the college football part of it. People are smarter than me, but rarely have somebody talk me out of it on the college football side of it. Okay, tomorrow. So thanks to Matt. Great stuff. You guys give him a follow at Matt Mascona. He is outstanding. And like you say, I'm always looking for somebody who's not afraid to put it out there. He's never been, and that validated it today. The show's better when Matt Mascona's guest. Thank you, Matt. Love you, brother, and I appreciate it. Tomorrow, Colt Nost. The Ryder Cup has the captain's picks are in. Now, Colt's got a combination Gary McCord, David Ferdy personality. He adds such spice to the CBS broadcast as a golf announcer. He's fun. He's knowledgeable. He's edgy. And he will bring it. Because it's perfect timing, golf, and you guys know me. Hell, I want to do a golf podcast. So I'm going to start doing stuff on TikTok and YouTube for golf. And I got a lot of ideas about that. So I love it. But he's going to give great insight, and he's a huge football fan too. So we'll be able to talk to him, and he runs with the big dogs, you know, the golfers, and he gets all the insight. But we're taping him at 11 tomorrow, and because of his schedule. So what we'll do is we're going to tape him. So you may not get me, man, may not be able to see your at 12 o'clock, see all your comments. So just for tomorrow is 11 o'clock. I'm taping him, and then we'll put it on. Unless we may be able to do this in Triple E, let's talk. Maybe we can get it where we go live at 11 tomorrow, just for tomorrow, 11 Central, to change, because you're going to love Colt. And you may have some questions and fire him, because the Ryder Cup, Keegan Bradley decided not to choose his guy himself. And he's playing phenomenal golf. He decided to do what he originally said. I'm focusing on being the captain. Patrick Cantlay. And I said the six guys a couple days ago, I posted on Twitter that Keegan has earned the right to play the way he's playing. Not in the top six, but as a caps pick. He should have taken himself by golf standards the way he played. But I wanted him to just focus on the captainship because he's got great assistance, but he can make a huge deal. His energy, we haven't had this energy as a Ryder Cup captain in a while. I friggin' love this guy, Keegan Bradley. He is perfect. Now, how the result's going to be, up to how Scottie Scheffler hits balls from 200 feet to 200 yards to 5 feet. But Colt will cover all this, but Patrick Cantlay, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, who is a top 10 player in the world, but struggling mightily this year as a captain's pick. But he's really good. And if he gets settled in, take one shot, look out. And Ben Griffin, who's had a phenomenal 2 years ago, Ben Griffin was a guy working on Wall Street or in the finance world. A guy took a shot on him as a sponsor to pay for travel and stuff. And now the guy has played out of his mind, won a couple times. And he deserved to be on it, but I thought he was going to get left out for Keegan. So Griffin, Thomas, Cantlay, Keegan, Sam Burns, no-brainer, has flat-ass earned it. We know that. Sam Burns is a great putter, one of the best putters in the world. You got to be able to hit it long, and you better be able to putt the Ryder Cup. Length is going to matter. And you thought, well, is Chris Goddard going to be part of it because he's long? And then I love this one with when Young got the call as well. And I know emotionally it mattered. He thought he was playing well enough. You heard him interviewed after last week that well enough to be selected. And he's right. And you want to talk about long and that hesitation at the top of his swing. So there's your team mixed in with the guys in Scheffler and Schauffele and guys who've already qualified and Bryson DeChambeau. We got a hell of a team, but the Euros aren't going to back off. They'll have a hell of a team too. And it should be fun. So we will talk to Colt Nost about that, who is PGA Tour Player of the Year. And we're going to dabble into a lot of things. He was one of the great amateur players on the planet. What happened? Well, why? But he's a, I think he's one of the, my favorite broadcasters on the planet too, because I love his energy. Golf needs it. Golf needs him. The show needs him. We'll be back with him tomorrow as well. So keep an eye on Twitter if you can, at Sean Unfiltered, at Unpaved on Rumble on Twitter, because we'll find out one way or the other. Colt Knows Beyond, you'll see it at noon. We'll either run it live at 11, or you can go back and watch the podcast, but it won't be live tomorrow at 12, maybe at 11, or you'll see the taped version at 12 just because of his schedule. I don't want to miss it. The timing's too perfect for the Ryder Cup. And while you're at it, drink a Spindle Tap beer. You see the El Rancho in the back right there? That right there would be your mocktails, which has got Delta 9 THC, 5 milligrams. You got 20 milligrams. You got the cotton candy that's got 10 milligrams. Unlike, there's no sugar. There's no alcohol in it. So you want to sit around and relax. You know, you get your buzz drinking your beer. You want to sit around and relax because your shoulders had shoulder surgery. Well, Delta 9 THC is a good thing. It really is. And do it responsibly. And we'll send it right to your door. You see it, 713-325-1477. My relationship with Spindle Tap is awesome. I'm grateful to be a team member and a partner, influencer, and a guy who isn't just a guy who talks with them. They're dear friends, and it's the best beer. You see that too. You can look up here. I got them up here from single IPAs, double IPAs, the five pint, the Houston Hustle. We got, they're all over the place. Great Mexican beer, low calorie beer. They got it all. And that will be flowing from a tap for me this weekend because I am getting set up for this. And it'll be flowing for me, obviously, in my refrigerator. It should be your twos. It's spindletap.com. Deliver it right to your door. The brewery's off the chart. They've expanded a new beer hall over and above the one they already have. You can play pickleball. You can go sit out there. So if you're in Houston, get to Spindle Tap. Contact me when you get here. I'll take you out there and we'll go have a beer together. The food, but it's simply the best beer, the best mocktails, and the best customer service you'll get. And the ownership, they're one of us. He's the guy who wants to call you. He's the guy, we'll get Brody on, as well as our Flash Funding folks on. But we'll get Brody on to come on here and talk about Spindle Tap. You'll love him. He's one of us, a Pat Texas Tech guy. Spindle Tap Brewery, Spindle Tap Beer. Check it out. Go to spindletap.com. Deliver right to your door, whether it's the mocktails or the great beer. And when you get here and go there, you'll say, I'm not drinking anything else. 713-325-1477 or spindletap.com. Great stuff from Matt Muscana. Man, Tripoli, I don't know about you, man. I was hoping nobody could ever talk me out of that, the transfer portal. Maybe I'm just too old school on the transfer portal, but I get it. I get it. It's worth it. It's something you got to give thought to. And Matt is well thought out. Matt doesn't just throw, he's not just throwing hot takes to throw them. He's got me thinking about it. Should we just leave the kids alone? And if you're out of it, he does make a great point as well, among a million of them that he made, is when you're 18, that's the biggest decision you'll ever make, unless you got somebody pregnant at 16 and made him whatever it is. But the big decision you make that's kind of the pecking order of life, what's with college? What am I going to get into in my career? Who am I going to marry? This is the first big one that's supposed to be on schedule, right? How many of us have screwed up a decision at 18 and at 20? Hell, how many of us are screwing decisions up at 50? So maybe, just maybe, are we too hard on the kids? And are we frustrated with them? Is it the adults that, while they did screw it up, that they're the ones who keep screwing it up? Or have we now created entitlement? Oh, I think all that's worth questions. But Matt Muscana made a good point. Leave it alone. All right. And what? Yeah, leave it alone. And when he talks about careers, coming to my job, I don't want anybody to put a ceiling on what I can make in my career. Hell no, neither do you. So should we, for the 18-year-old kid that the adults been greedy and been hoarding money and coaches forever, they've been taking it all for themselves, and then they had, oh, okay. And now the next day, now it's turned around. The quarterback or the kid from LSU that transferred, that's the starting quarterback for Michigan this week, as you heard Matt talk about, you realize that $12 million that Oracle donated the program for him, do you realize he's going to make more money than the guy who's coaching him in the room this week? When he takes the field as a freshman, he is going to make more money than the quarterback coach in the room with him this year. Argue away. We'll do it more. Tomorrow, Colt Knost, among others, as we roll on to the best time of the year. Playoff baseball around the corner, NFL football, and phenomenal college football and golf. It's going to get a little chillier. So you go out and play 36 holes of golf in 75 degree weather instead of 103. Although people in Arizona and even here in Texas are laughing at me saying, Sean, you're out of your damn mind. Maybe, but that's how psycho I am. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Remember, Colt possibly at 11. Keep an eye on it, but you'll see him at 12 on the podcast. But we may be able to schedule him for 11 tomorrow and do it live and get your comments. But you'll love him too, and he'll become one of your favorite. Colt Nost on Twitter. He'll become one of your favorite guys if you haven't heard him. And I'm a golf obsessed nut job. So we'll do that tomorrow. Great stuff from Matt Mascona. For Triple E, myself, and Laura, man, and you can also tell your friends, up live on Apple, Spotify. You can catch us on YouTube. I mean, all of them. We're rolling. You asked for it. People around the country have asked for it. We're giving it to you, and it's only going to get bigger and better. And we're great. And I don't want a ceiling put on my money either, and neither do you. So guess what? UNC in the hunt, maybe. We're going to find out what Bill does. I think it's Monday night in his opener. So I want to make all the money. I want to share it too. That's who I am. But I want to make it so I can have my refuge for dogs and keep them safe forever and maybe help somebody else out who doesn't. So I don't want NIL to put a cap on mine. Should we say the same thing about the high school guys? There we go. We look forward to it, but I do. My number one goal with the money is to create a refuge for dogs on about 15 acres to where they come and they never have to worry about dying. That's the top priority. So maybe a billionaire right around the corner. Would that be great? Okay. Anybody want to donate to it? You can do that too. But I'm a giver, not a taker. And when it comes to animals, those are fighting words if anybody thinks different. We'll look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow. Appreciate your insight. And I love this show. And I can't wait till you continue to see it expand to where it becomes not only I'm helping people too. I help people all the time. I took in a homeless man for 2 years off the streets and the freeway. So you don't have to worry about that. That's always been mine. And I understand he lived with me for 2 years and I didn't know him. So I take care of plenty. But you know what? Dogs deserve the same treatment. And I would argue at times that people first. There's plenty of people that are just full-blown dumb shits. Not you, but dumb shits. That I'll take the dog over the person because the person, the dog has a little more compassion for others. So I love people. But you know what? I don't treat animals like second-class citizens. I treat them like humans, and I always will. So there you go. I got three dogs, and it's going to grow because I am going to make it to the point where I can take care of them and prevent somebody from dropping them off in the middle of the street and abusing them. Those are fighting words, too. But we end on a good note. Great stuff from Matt Mascona. We'll see you guys tomorrow. I love you, and I appreciate it. And let's turn this podcast into the best sports podcast and fun entertainment in the country. Great guests and great insight. We'll see you guys tomorrow.